All right, guys, come on back in. We're going to get going here. Packer game doesn't start till 2, which is a really weird time. Not as much Packer gear this service as the last service. Are you guys not as excited about the game? Or who here, I'm just curious, who here thinks the Packers are going to win? Raise your hand. All right. Who here thinks Packers are going to lose? Raise your hand. Now, you see, I have to admit, I'm wearing this shirt today because I think this is going to be my last chance to wear it. They booed me first service when I said that. I think that Atlanta's an awfully good team. But who knows? God's a Packer fan, so you just never know what'll happen. We are in the middle of a series that we started last week. We're looking at the life of David, and we're calling it "I Was Young and Now I Am Old." And you know, the whole point of Christianity, the whole point of what we do here is we talk about how to begin and grow in a relationship with God. That's the whole point of this. God's desire for you and I is that we would know Him. He says, I know you and I want you to know me. That's what God created us for, is to be in relationship with Him. And so all of what we talk about here, the whole point of gathering together, the whole point, the whole end game of Christianity is relationship. I know God. I'm growing closer to God. I'm becoming more like God. I'm recognizing what it means to have God be my dad, my father. I know what it looks like and feels like to be His friend. These are words that He uses to describe His relationship with us. I feel the passion that God has for me, similar to a young husband and a young wife. God uses these analogies. And so we're learning how to live in, kind of walk in this relationship with God. That's what we do this for. And so the Bible speaks to us about that. The Bible is one of the amazing things that God gives us that helps us to understand how that happens, what that looks like, what that feels like, what the pitfalls are in that. The Bible speaks to us about this idea of having a relationship with God. And one of the things that the Bible does is it gives us examples of men and women who are doing that. Some of them are doing it well, some of them are doing it poorly, some in between, good and bad. But we see pictures, we see examples of men and women who are doing that, interacting with God, and that's given to us as instruction, as help for you and I, as we look to do that here. And it's so important to remember, guys, that what is written in the Bible is not history, it's an example to you. It's very current. The things that happen there are very current because they can happen with you. And God's desire is for you to know Him, not to hear about other people who knew Him. God's desire is for you to experience Him, not know that somebody else experienced Him. So we read these stories, and we see how God interacted with people. We see how people interacted with God so that we can take a step forward in our own, in my personal relationship with God. Well, what we're doing here with this series is we're looking at a guy named David, and what's kind of special about this, if you will, is many of the examples of people we see in the Bible are just portions of their life. It's little vignettes. It's, you know, we see them for a very short period in their life. David, this guy David, we see him from the time he's a very young man all the way up till he dies. We see his entire life. And so we get to see what it looks like to follow God, to love God, to have this relationship with God through all of the different stages of life. And David's one of the guys that is kind of held up to us as a good example. Here's a guy who kind of did this fairly well. God says, hey, you know what, David, you did well. In fact, God compared all the rest of the kings. David was one of the very first kings of the nation of Israel, and God kind of compared every other king after him to David. He either did as well or not as well as David. So David is a guy that God says, hey, here's someone that you can really kind of learn some good lessons from, and we see his life from the time he's a very young boy to the time that he dies. Not only do we see kind of a description of his life, but David wrote down an awful lot of what he was thinking and feeling. So many of the Psalms were written by David, and what they are is, this is what's going on in my head. This is what's going on in my heart. So we see the events of his life, and we get to see what he's thinking and feeling about those events all through life. So it's just kind of this wonderful study for you and I to learn what it looks like for him, not so that I can know what happened with him, but so that I can take steps forward in my own relationship with God. That's what we're talking about. And that phrase, I was young and now I am old, David actually said that in Psalm 37. He said, I was young and now I am old. And he's kind of acknowledging, you know what? I've been walking with God for a long time. And so we're just looking at that. What can we learn? What do we learn in looking at his life? Now, last week, we talked about youth. We talked about that stage of life when we're young. And we looked at a portion in time when David was a very young man. And we looked mostly at the story of David and Goliath. And if you were a kid and had a kid's Bible, that story is in every children's Bible, I suspect, that has ever been printed. And we've all heard about David and Goliath, right? And we looked at that story, and David at that time was a young man, we don't know exactly, but probably 12 years old, give or take. He wasn't old enough to be in the army, and they took him into the army pretty early back then, so he was a very, very, very young man, and we see some certain things. Now, if you were here last week, there's a little quiz here, it's a little remembrance for you. Well, we said that there are three things that David did as a young man that we can do as young men and not so young men and women to in our relationship with God. You guys remember what they were? There were three specific things. Concentrate your zeal. Zeal and passion is something all of us have, but when we're young, we kind of wear it on our sleeve. And it's just there. I was at a bonfire Friday night, and they started with a trailer, no kidding, a trailer full of old Christmas trees, and that wasn't quite enough, so they covered it with diesel fuel. And they put a match to it, and it exploded. When the flames are shooting, 30 feet up in the air, and it's just so hot, and you can see it for miles and miles and miles around. And when we're young, that's kind of, we're idealistic, we have drive, we see what's good and right in the world, and we're passionate, and we're zealous, and we just kind of wear it, and everybody can see it. When we're older, that zeal is still there, but it's kind of those embers. And about 5 hours after that fire started, there was just a pile of coals, just as hot, just as powerful, but it's a little bit different. When we're young, that zeal is on our sleeve. So we talked about when we're young, we have to concentrate it, focus that zeal. David did it. He decided, all kinds of things I can be excited about. I'm going to be excited about God. I'm going to be excited about knowing and having a relationship with God, and all the other things that I could be excited about, I'm focusing on that. What's the second thing? You concentrate your zeal. Second thing was what? Submit your zeal. It's not good to have zeal without knowledge. Young people and old people, I have to do this. I take my passions, what's exciting, what I want to do, what is stirring me, and I submit it to the men and women around me. Say, what do you think about this? How can I refine this? How can you help me to shape this? Submission is a beautiful thing in God's world. Jesus himself, God himself, when Jesus was here, he says, zeal consumed me, and then he submitted it to God. You tell me what to say. You tell me what to do. Do not think that your zeal alone is going to accomplish what you want it to. You have to submit it to the men and women around you. Third thing, you remember? Unleash your zeal. Pull the trigger. I'm going to do something. David said, there's a giant out there. I think I'll go kill him. So he did. There's giants in your life that God wants you to kill. Take your courage in your hands and go do it. All right. Now, we're going to shift gears today. That was last week. We talked about youth. Our culture, the world we live in, kind of glorifies youth. Why? Well, because we're strong and fast and beautiful when we're young. And we get older and we get gray. And Mark Anderson isn't here, so I can talk about him. There he is right there. He's a great guy, but he's bald. Look, he's old. When we're young, that's kind of, that's the best years of our life, right? I mean, that's what songs talk about, and we look back to when we're young and think, those were the good days. That is not true. I'm going to talk today about how I believe that is absolutely not true. Youth is great. Youth is a wonderful, beautiful thing, but the greatest beauty, the greatest power, the greatest joy and adventure And being a Christian comes later, not when you're young. Comes as you live your life as an adult. Because we ended last week with this saying, and we're going to start with it today. Youth ends, but the adventure doesn't. You will stop being young. You will. Youth will end. Peter Pan is not real. You're going to get old. The only question is whether you do it well or not. That's the only question. Youth ends, the adventure doesn't. So what does it look like as we pass from youth, those young days, into an adult? Well, again, we're going to look at that today, and we're going to look at David a little bit, his life, and see, well, how can I translate that to my life? And David, you know, set his course as a young man. We talked about that, how when we're young, we're concentrating our zeal, we're directing it, and we're setting a course for our life. This is what's important to me. This is how I'm going to define success in my life. This is what I'm shooting for in my life. We do that as young men and women. David did that as a young man. He set his course, but then he walked it. Okay, that's where I'm going. And he jumped into it, but then he woke up, and he had to do it again, and he had to live his life. He had to walk that path. You and I need to do it as well. And David did it, and we see him walking this path of adulthood kind of on the course of life that he had set as a young man. And there's a phrase here. It's in 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 15, that is kind of a throwaway verse almost, but I think that this probably defines most of David's life. And it says, David reigned over all Israel, doing what was just and right for all his people. Now we can look at that and think, oh yeah, okay, David was a king. Well, let's get on to the next thing that happened. Let's, you know, what's the next war he fought or something like that. I think that most of David's life was defined by this. He was just doing the things that God put in front of him. He was reigning over Israel, doing what is just and right for all his people. What does that mean? Well, I don't know. Some days it meant, you know what, he had to sit there and sort out arguments for people. Some days it meant he had to, you know, kind of get his cabinet straightened out. Some days it meant, I mean, I don't know what a king does. I don't know what, but he just did stuff every day that we don't see. It wasn't extravagant. It wasn't big and flashy. It was just stuff. He was just doing the small things that God put in front of him day by day. And he did it this day, and then he did it the next day, and he just kind of kept doing that for years. And I think, guys, that we need to recognize that this is so much of what Christianity is about. I think that Christianity is more about doing the small, repetitive things again and again and again. It's more about that than it is about the big events. There are big events that happen. There are big, momentous things that happen to us in our Christian life. We go on a mission trip. We go to a conference where, you know, we have a crisis and we see God come through. Those things are real. They're powerful. God uses them, but they're few and far between. It happens here, and then we go for years, and then it happens here, and then some months, and it happens here. And those times in between are where so much of Christianity happens. So much of the goodness and the power and the joy and the beauty in being a Christian comes in those times when kind of it looks like not a whole lot is going on. When I fell in love with my wife as a young man, and she was a young woman, and it was just, you know, oh, it was so shockingly overpowering, and it was just so new and thrilling. And, you know, I finally found out she likes me too. I thought she liked my roommate for a long time. No, she likes me. And it's like, oh my gosh, my heart's just beating like this. And we kind of, you know, we're getting closer. And then I asked her to marry me and she said yes. And I'm just giddy. And then our wedding day is coming closer. And all I can think about is marrying this girl. And it stays huge. It's the fire just burning bright and hot. And diesel fuel is just being poured on that thing. And more Christmas trees. And it's and it was fun. And it was exciting. And it was real. And it was powerful. But in all honesty, without exaggerating even a little, my relationship with my wife now is so much better than it was then. It is deeper. It is fuller. I know her so much better. She knows me. We have an intimacy, a comfort with each other, a desire. I'm convinced that she longs for my best, and I long for her best. We know each other. I love her more now than I did then. And you know what created that? All kinds of mornings, waking up and just seeing her sitting there across the room. All kinds of afternoons, coming home and just having supper together. All kinds of times, deciding which of us is going to take the kids into town. All kinds of just stuff that nobody sees, but we're interacting. We're living life together in very small ways. And so our love, our relationship is deeper, fuller, richer because of lots of little things that nobody ever sees. And I would wake up in the morning and I would say, I want to love this woman today. And she would wake up in the morning, say, I want to love this man today. And we'd do it. Sometimes well, sometimes not so well, but we'd get up the next day and try again. That's what this is about. And do not think that's drudgery. I don't look back on those years, you know, from the time that Sue and I were getting engaged and getting married, you know, all that time in between, think, oh, it's such a drudgery. It's such a burden. No. I mean, in the middle of it, I'm not thinking, well, this is the greatest thing ever. But I look on it now and think, oh, thank you, Sue, that you woke up and just took a small step with me today. Because I just love that. That's what Christianity is so much about. You wake up and you take a small step with God. What is God putting in front of you today? What is the thing today, that small thing that maybe no one's going to see, that you and God can do today? And if you do it today and tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day, you know what happens? You get 10, 15, 20 years down the line and you say, God, you're amazing. Oh my gosh. The whole point of Christianity is what? To have a relationship with God. And so you do those small things and 5, 10, 15 years down the line, you think, holy cow, where did this come from? I know you, God. I feel close to you. I see you working in my life. My life is so good. My relationship with you is so much stronger because of these wild, crazy events. Well, there have been some, but mostly because of small choices that I made day after day to relate to you. To respond to you. So much of Christianity as an adult is doing that. What is God putting in front of you, and are you doing it? Whether anybody sees or not, whether it seems really flashy or a big deal or not. So the question is, what is God putting in front of you? What are the things that God is setting in front of you just on a regular basis? They probably tend to, the things that God sets in front of us, just like he did with David, they tend to fall into a couple categories. One of them is relationships. God has put people around you. He's chosen to do that. God is a very relational God. You and I are very relational creatures. We're like God in that way. And so God puts you and he sets relationships in front of you and asks you to work at them, do them. Relationship with God. Do you every day spend time with God? You know, if you come here, you're going to get sick of hearing me say this, but read your Bible every day because God speaks to you through it. Talk to God every day because you speak to God that way. Are you kind of working that relationship on a daily basis? Your family, your husband, your wife, your kids, your brothers, your sisters, your mom and dad, that is a relationship God has set in front of you. Are you working it? Is that something that is a priority to you? Are you doing that? Are you recognizing, hey, this is important. I need to invest in that relationship. How is that relationship going? Ever just take a step back and kind of take stock of the relationship you have with your family? Well, I think that's something God has put in front of you that requires our attention, requires our work. The people around you in church, the people sitting next to you, are you building a relationship with them? Are you investing in the people who are around you in church? You know, God compares this, the church, to a family. And so am I growing closer to you guys? At least some of you, the ones that God has set in front of me. Last night, our small group, our life group, went out and went sledding over at Ryan and Lisa's house in the rain. And, you know, sledding in the rain doesn't do a whole lot for you spiritually, but it sure does a lot for you relationally. And it's fun. And I don't remember, Ryan. Who won finally? Yeah, I think, well, let's just say I did. We were having competition to see who could go the farthest down the tube. I think I won. Or maybe Ryan won. Somebody won. But it's fun to do that. Are you growing in those relationships? Are you closer to the people in your church family now than you were 2 years ago, 3 years ago? Are you working them? Your friends, the people around you, the people at work, the people at school, people who don't know the Lord perhaps, are you engaged in those relationships? Are you seeing those people? Are you taking advantage of opportunities to maybe introduce them to the Lord, to maybe invite them to church, to maybe love and serve them? The point is that God sets relationships. So when you ask, what's God put in front of me? Well, one of the things is relationships. Second big category is probably responsibilities. What are the things that you have to do? You know, one of the things that we have to do as an adult is you get up every morning and most of us go to work. Well, do you see that as something that God has asked you to do? Are you working at it well? Are you giving yourself to your job so that your employer is blessed by you? Recognizing that God says, hey, you know what, when you serve him, you're serving me. Are you working well at your finances? Are you managing them well? It's just a thing that God has set in front of us. Home, are you, you know, if you're a dad, are you raising your children to know the Lord? Are you working hard to love and to lead your wife like God asks you to do? Are you engaged in that organizational role as a dad and a father? A wife, if you're at home, are you working hard to respect and love your husband, to be his partner in this thing? Is that on your heart, on your mind? Are you working hard to kind of manage the affairs of your home? Our home is a big, big part of what God does. And we have responsibilities there. Kids, are you honoring your mom and dad? Because that's what it says. Are you loving each other, your brothers and sisters? We have responsibilities in the home. Are we taking them seriously? Church, you know, God says that this works well. He compares this to a body, and each one of us has a role. Do you know what your role is here at church, and are you filling it? Are you working at what happens here at church? These are things that we do kind of day by day on a regular basis that a lot of it nobody sees, but God says this is what I'm putting in front of you. And if you do those things, you're blessed by them. He's blessed by them, okay? So the first thing, as an adult, it's good for us maybe to ask ourselves, well, Lord, what have you put in front of me? Who are the people that you want me to invest in? And how do you want me to do it? What are the responsibilities that I have? And how do you want me to do them? How am I doing on them? That's a good thing to ask. Just to be very, very systematic about it, perhaps. Who are the people and what are the responsibilities that God has put in front of you? It's good to ask. Once we see them, just like David, and I think David saw them, these are the things that God has asked me to do, all right, I'm going to do them. Now, for the rest of our time, for just a few minutes, we're going to look at three things that we do, maybe ways that we go about that, maybe ways we go about doing the things that are in front of us, maybe things to expect as we go about doing the things that God has put in front of us, okay? So we ask God, what are the things you've put in front of me? I'm going to do them. And we're going to look at three things here, guys, as we do that. Here's the first one, all right? What has God put in front of me? Well, find out what it is and then work at it daily. Work at it daily. That's what David did. And in Psalm 61, again, here we see David speaking, and he's just kind of talking about his life. And the first part of this psalm is he's kind of relaying what we talked about last week. He's saying, God, you're my goal. You're my passion in life. He's remembering, as a young man, I stirred my passions and I fixed them on you and I'm keeping them there. And I set my course to follow you. That's what the first part of this psalm is about. But then in verse 6, he says this, increase the days of the king's life, his years for many generations. He's recognizing, you know, I was a young kid back then and I decided to follow you, but it's for a long time. I got years to do this. I have generations to do this in. And then in verse 8, he says this, then I will ever sing praise to your name and fulfill my vows day after day. I like that. I memorized that verse years ago. I will ever sing praise to your name and fulfill my vows day after day, because I think it catches both of these things. I'm going to sing praise to your name. What does that mean? I'm remembering what my passion is. You are the source. You are the object of my affection. I love you. And my heart is just overwhelmed with emotion and excitement. And I am fixing my gaze and my desires on you. I'm singing praises to you. And you know how I'm going to do it? I'm going to fulfill my vows day after day after day after day. I'm going to live life doing the things you've put in front of me day after day after day. I'm not going to take huge breaks. I'm just going to do what you've set in front of me day after day. Why? Because you're my God. My desire is you. And if you've asked me to do this thing, no matter how small it may be, I'm going to do it. And there's something very, very wonderful and noble about that. Sometimes I think when I say that, sometimes our personalities are such that some of us love that kind of thing. Yeah, I'm just a plotter. Just tell me the next. I love that. Some of us just recoil against that, and we hate the thought of that. Some of us love process. Some of us hate process. I don't know where you're at. I'm going to tell you a reality. You live in process. And doing these things on a regular basis is both honoring and empowering. Let me read this verse to you. This is I have it in the Revised. I'm going to read it in the Revised Standard here because I think it catches it a little bit better. It's in Luke chapter 16. Verse 10 says, "He who is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much. And he who is dishonest in a very little is dishonest also in much." And he goes on to talk about that. He explains that a little bit more in there. But I think that that's a powerful thing for us to grasp. You see, if we're faithful in a very little, we're faithful also in much. One of the things that I catch from that is this, that it is honoring to God when I do these small things that he's asked me to do. You know, if my kids only do the big things that I ask them to do, you know what? I ask them, okay, today, Katie, I want you to, you know, wash the dishes and take the dogs for a walk and vacuum the floor and bring your brother home from school. Okay, four things I've asked her to do. She looks at that and says, you know what? This one, you know, washing the dishes, it's not such a big deal. Feeding the dogs, taking them for a walk, okay, I'll do that. Taking my brother home, I don't even want him to come home. And this one, if she kind of sorted through them and did some of them and not others, would that be honoring to me as a dad? Would it? Would that be honoring to me? And if I came home and only half the things are done, she'd say, yeah, I just didn't do them. Well, that's not honoring. You do the things that your father, your master, your commander has asked you to do, even the little things. And it's a great honor to your dad when you just do them. It's honoring. And I want to honor my dad. Why? Well, because he's the object of my passions, right? Remember, we talked about that. I'm setting my affection on God. He's the source and the object of all that's in me. So I'm going to do the little things he's asked me to do because it's honoring to him. Here's the second thing. It is empowering and strengthening to you. You are better off because of it. Last night, I said I was at this men's thing, and I don't know if I said that. The bonfire that I was talking about was this men's overnight, and I was there. And after the bonfire, after the explosion, they decided to play broom ball. They had a pond there, so they shoveled the pond off and were playing broom ball. Well, about some number of years ago, I tore the meniscus in my knee, had to have it fixed. After that, I'd favored it and my leg got weak, and so I couldn't run at all. I couldn't run from here to the back door. My knee just hurt too badly to run. So I went to a physical therapist, and the physical therapist said, well, you got to do these strengthening exercises for your knee and your leg. And so for the past year, every other day, I've been doing these exercises. And they're not, there's nothing remarkable about them. I do leg lifts. I do lunges, you know, 20 of these every other day. Well, so what? Who cares? Did any of you know I was doing that? No. Now that you do know, do you care? No. If I didn't do them, would it bother you? No. But let me tell you something. I was able to go and play broom ball with those guys last Friday night because every day, every other day for a year, I did my exercises. You do these little things, it strengthens you. I got done playing broom ball, my knee didn't hurt. The rest of me did, but my knee did not hurt. Spiritually, we need to be strengthened. You're not just strong spiritually just because you're a Christian. You do these little things. If you're faithful, what happens? Well, you're going to get stronger so you can do more things. If you do the little things, you'll be able to do the big things. And the converse is true, folks. Spiritually, if you don't do the little spiritual things, you will not be able to do the big spiritual things. Don't kid yourself. If you don't lift small weights a lot, you're not going to be able to lift a big weight. Just ain't going to happen. It's honoring to your Father when you work every day at the things He's put in front of you, and it's strengthening to you. So that's the first thing. Work at it daily. Here's a second. As you do these things every day, you grow in character. You change as you do the things God has put in front of you every day. In Psalm 139, this is David speaking again. And I think about this verse a lot. He says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." David was an older man here at this point, and he recognized something. He was the king. He was in charge. He was, you know, God had been talking to him and about him for a long time at this point. And yet, David is looking at his life and saying, "Lord, there's probably stuff in me. In fact, I know there's stuff in me that needs to change. You search me, O God, and see what's not right. And then, when you see it, lead me. Help me to change. Help me to be different." Most of the great character growth that comes in a Christian, I believe this, most of the character growth, most of the things about you that you're most proud of come later in life. You don't develop them as a youth, I don't think. Character growth, I believe the greatest character growth comes later in life. Why do I say that? Well, let me just show you a couple of verses here. In 2 Peter chapter 1, it says this, verse 5, "For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness." And he listed all these character qualities. Add to your faith, let these things come. Add to your faith goodness, to goodness knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. So, okay, you've got this faith, you've become a Christian, great. Now add these character qualities to it. Grow in these things. And then he says this, "For if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being ineffective and unproductive in your knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ." So these are things that we have to add to ourselves. Over time, we need to increase in them. And then if we do, what happens? Well, then we're not ineffective and unproductive. In other words, we are effective and we are productive. But these things come not right away, but over time. And then in James chapter 1, verse 2, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything." Again, hey, mature and complete, not lacking in anything. That's what I'm shooting for here. I want to grow in character. But what is it? It's interesting in this verse in James. It says that, does this verse say that trials make us mature and complete? Does it say, here, I'll read it again. "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything." What is it that makes us mature and complete, not lacking in anything? Perseverance. Trials lead to perseverance. Perseverance is what gives us character and growth, and perseverance, by definition, requires time. You don't persevere for 10 seconds. That's not perseverance. That's blinking. Perseverance requires time. Character is built over time. I've been reading a book on wine, and it's called The History of Wine in 100 Bottles, and it's just these little vignettes about wine and all of the history of wine. And when you think about wine, a lot of what happens with early on when they're producing wine, there's a lot of crazy, great big things that happen, right? You pull the grapes off the plant, wah, pull them off, and you stomp on them and squish, 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 and the juice comes flying out, and all of these big, wild, radical changes to the grape happens early on. And they do all this stuff, and then they put it in the bottles, and it ferments, and there it is. You've got your wine. But people get really excited about wine, and so they'll make wine and they'll keep records of it. They're finding these bottles of wine, or maybe they've known about them forever, but that are hundreds of years old. They have a bottle of wine from 1547. How old is that? That's a long time. 500? No. Is that 500 years? 500-year-old wine. Well, they opened one. Bunch of college kids. No, it wasn't. It was these wine connoisseurs opened a bottle of wine and they tasted it and they were just blown away. It's holy smoke. They were flavors they'd never tasted before. And the point to it is this: all of the crazy radical things for wine happened early on, but the deepness, the mellowness, the richness, the great power in it came slowly over a long period of time. Understand the correlation. Your deepness, your richness, your great power comes, your maturity, your character comes over time as you're doing small things again and again and again. The big events happen in your life. The big events happen in Christianity. The great power, the great mellowing, the great joy, the great beauty in your life comes as a result of small choices made again and again and again and again and again over time. It's a great joy to be an adult and to be able to do these small things again and again and again because we grow as a result of it. David saw what was in front of him. He did it. You and I can do that. As we do that, we work at it daily. We grow in character. That was the second thing. Here's the third thing. As we look at our life and say, Lord, what are the things you've put in front of me? Help me to do them regularly, daily. Help me to grow in character as I do them. Here's the third thing. Don't fear failure. Don't fear failure. David failed spectacularly. David failed with unfortunate regularity. David failed in the same areas again and again and again. He failed with some continuity. Failure was not absent from David's life, nor is it absent from anybody's life. Failure is not going to be absent from your life. Don't fear it. We need to respond to it well, but we don't fear it. Look at what David said in Psalm 51. This is a psalm he wrote after one of his spectacular failures. He raped a woman and killed her husband after he got her pregnant. Complete and total failure as a king, as a husband, as a man. Just complete failure. This is what he says. And this whole psalm is responding to that. In verse 4, actually, I'll start reading in verse 3. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you, speaking to God, against you, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight. In verse 5, he says, surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. David didn't sugarcoat his sin. He took it head on. Full on, face on, I have failed. He didn't blame somebody else. He didn't try to explain it away. He didn't say it's not that bad. He just took it. I know my sin. It's always before me. And God, I have sinned against you, and this isn't the first time. That's what he's saying here. But then, in verse 10, he says this, create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. And he changes tone here. He acknowledges he's sinned against God, but then he says, God, pick me up and take me with you where you're going. How can he do that? He didn't fear failure. And guys, we need to recognize two things. We need to respond to failure as Christians, as people, in some very, very powerful ways. We make the mistake of doing one of two things. One, we ignore it. We try to explain it away. We try to soft pedal it. It's not that bad. It's not my fault. It's this person's fault. I can stop anytime I want. Whatever. We try to explain our sin away. Or we wallow in it. Oh, I'm so bad. It's ruined. I can't ever recover from this. Nobody wants me around. God doesn't want me around. I have failed too bad, and I'm just stuck in this. I'm never going to get out of this. Both of those are wrong. Instead, we say, Lord, I have sinned. We acknowledge when we make mistakes, but then we expect that God is going to do something about it. I like this verse here in Micah. I ran across this years ago. Micah 7, verse 8, it says, "Do not gloat over me, my enemy. Though I have fallen, I will rise. Though I sit in darkness, the Lord will be my light. Because I have sinned against him, I will bear the Lord's wrath until he pleads my case and establishes my right. He will bring me out into the light. I will see his righteousness." I love that. He says, look, I have fallen. I've sinned against God, and there's a consequence to that. God disciplined me. I'm bearing his wrath. When we sin, it's real, and there's a powerful reaction to it. And this guy says it. I've sinned against God, and I'm feeling his wrath, but I'm not staying here because God, after he disciplines me, is going to pick me up and take me out into the light. He's going to take me to righteousness. Understand, people, that two incredibly powerful things happen to you when you sin if you respond correctly. When you fail, two incredibly powerful things happen. Here's the first one. You experience grace in a way that you never did before. Because grace becomes real. God's unconditional love becomes real when it's right in front of you that you don't deserve it, but you feel it anyhow. It's just theory until then. When you sin, and you go to God, filled with the weight and the magnitude of your failure, and God says, I love you anyway, that's when you really feel grace. I can remember as a husband failing terribly, and I've talked about this some before, I won't get into it too much, but just a very real, powerful, the only way to say it is a sexual addiction, and it carrying on into my marriage, absolute failure, and recognizing the ugliness of it, and longing to have it be gone and never have to deal with it again, and feeling it, and wanting God to do something, and failing in it, and then coming to God in the instant of my failure and having him say, Rob, you're my boy. You're my boy. And if you don't think that's real, you have never experienced grace, because that's what it is. God's love for you transcends your sin. It doesn't ignore it. God deals with us. God punishes us. God helps us to grow. But it doesn't change his love, his desire for you. Grace becomes real to you when you recognize your failure. But here's the second thing. If you respond to it and say, Lord, I have failed. I feel your love now. Help me to be different. And we grow and we change. We learn wisdom. We grow in character as a result of our failures. And God picks us up. Says, no matter where you are now, we can get to where you want to go. Give me your hand. You failed. That's okay. Maybe there's a discipline. That's good. But let's learn. And let's move forward. Don't fear your failures. Don't fear him. If David feared his failures, we wouldn't be talking about him today. Or we'd be talking about him as a really bad example. Instead, this is a man who was after God's own heart. Even in the midst of his failures, don't fear them. Okay? What does God put in front of you, folks? What does God put in front of you? Do it daily. Grow in character as you do it, and don't fear failure. Now, next week, we're going to finish up talking about when we get older. We talked about youth, we talked about adulthood, we're going to talk about older, and we're going to leave us with this. The best is yet to come. Guys, we're still not done. The best is yet to come. Let's pray. Father, we just thank you that you know us, and you lead us through all the stages of life. Lord, I just pray that you would speak to us. Help us, God. Help us to grow close to you as young men and women. Help us to walk with you day by day as adults. That's our desire, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.